I have come here to chew bubble gum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubble gum.
And welcome back to Rapid and Red Radio. And joining me this go-round is the man who owns probably the coolest company on the face of the planet. It's not just horror poster shirts, but it details horror scenes on a t-shirt. Ben Scrivens from Fright Rag. Ben, how are you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
And I was actually really excited about this because you did something that, like, everybody I think dreams about, and it's just like, you know, I want to make cool t-shirts and I'm just gonna go do it, and lo and behold, you succeeded.
Yeah, it's been a pretty wild ride for the last decade, but it was something I never thought would be a full-time job, but apparently I was proven wrong.
Exactly how did it happen? You say the company started in 2003, but what was like 2002 like, that build up to, you know, saying, I'm going to do this. This is my idea. It's not going to be, you know, every type of movie. It's going to be horror.
Well, actually, I mean, you know, the idea didn't even come to me until about literally 2 months before I even started the company. I had been working for a laptop bag company here in town as an in-house designer, and I was designing ads and doing the website stuff and doing all the sort of print and web stuff for them. And it was a nice, it was a good job, and it was a small company, but I was just getting really bored. And at the time, my then girlfriend, which we're now married, we were living together, and, you know, we had an apartment, we didn't have kids yet, so we had a lot of time on our hands. And I would, you know, I just wanted something to do to release some creative steam that I had built up, because I would go to work, and even though it was a good job, it was the same thing day in and day out. So I started thinking about the stuff that I could do, and I've always been sort of poking around online and forums, and of course, being a huge horror fan, I'm a part of horror forums and talking about movies, and I had friends that made, you know, Jason masks and Freddy gloves. I'm like, what can I do? What's something that I could make that would speak to me and then other people like me? Because we're all around the same age and all this stuff. So I couldn't get a vacuum former and put it in my apartment, you know. Nor could I even put like a screen printing studio in my apartment or anything, but I did have some knowledge of screen printing, and I've always been interested in kind of wacky shirts and stuff. So it's just kind of, I don't know, I started poking around with some ideas, and the What Would Jason Do design was actually the first thing I looked at and went, oh, that's kind of cool, because it's not a typical poster on a shirt. It's something new that I had never seen before.
Yeah.
And I actually looked it up on Google and couldn't even find any reference to that parody. I mean, there had already been What Would Jesus Do parodies, of course, but nothing crossing over to the horror thing that I had found. And so I posted it on a friend's forum and with a couple other designs, and people were like, oh, I would totally buy that. And literally over the course of Labor Day weekend, I came up with the name, the basic logo, the website. I figured out how to get PayPal running. I'd never used PayPal before, I don't think, maybe with eBay or something. And I just put it up there and then announced it on the forum and started getting orders. And that was it. That was how it started. And then I just kept poking away at it ever since.
And the What Would Jason Do, that was really a breakout shirt.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of people were, you know, featured on TV wearing that. Like, it was everywhere.
Yeah, it's funny. That one had a couple different lives. You know, that was definitely one of our main shirts that would just perpetually sell. And, you know, after a few years, you know, it kind of dies out. And then by 2006, to be honest, by 2005, we had gotten a cease and desist letter from New Line Studios because we were using the Jason mask from Part 6 pretty accurately. And they said, hey, you can't do that. You know, that's our property. We own the trademark too. They don't own, you know, it's a misconception. People say, you know, well, they can't own hockey masks. Well, that's true, but they own elements of the Jason mask. They own the triangles and the position of the vent holes and the way it looks. They own that look. So if you're infringing on that, they can come after you for that. So I said, all right, you know, I'll change it because that's a parody. I've done a parody of your property. It should be okay, even though not every parody is fair use. I don't want to make it sound like just because you make fun of something, it's acceptable.
Yes.
But at the same time, if I remove those trademarks from the image, it should be okay. And I did that, and that's why it looks like it does today. It almost looks like an alien because I took everything that they said they owned and moved it around and made it not look like that. And they said, okay, just don't call it Friday 13th. And I said, I never did. I wouldn't anyway. So put it back up online. And the next day, that's when Hot Topic ordered them from us to be sold in their stores. And they placed two pretty big orders that year for 2006. And it was in their shops nationwide. So that was like the second life. And then after that, it kind of petered out. And then it was featured on 30 Rock. And that sort of reignited the whole thing a few years later, which was kind of funny. So it's definitely had a few lives.
For each and every shirt, do you have to get the image rights? Like, do you have to do a lot of licensing? Or does most of it fall under, you know, fair use parodies like the You're All My Kittens Now?
Well, that's a good question because we, when I first started out, I didn't think about licensing. It was something where I was just sort of like, I just want to do something cool. And that was ignorance, but it was also, I started learning very quickly, okay, this is not what you do and you can't really do that. And I kind of crossed the line there. And, you know, companies would contact me saying, hey, you can't do that. And sometimes I'd either be, you know, not sued, but, either having to take the stuff down, or I'd come, you know, we'd make a deal so we could continue selling it, that type of thing. But these days, a lot of the stuff we do has to be licensed. I mean, the times that we, you know, might not is like the parody type stuff. So the You're All My Kittens Now is just one of those funny things where you've done a different take on something that's popular. So you've made it something new. Uh-huh. And again, with parody, it's a fine line because not every parody, just because you make fun of something doesn't mean that the company can't come after you. They can come after you all they want.
Oh, no.
If it's something you've done that they don't like and that they own the property, well, guess what? They can come after you. It's not, they can't just back off because it's parody.
Exactly.
And that's why we have, you know, a lawyer to talk to and say, hey, what do you think about this? They might be like, that's pushing it. I wouldn't do it. Or, you know what? You probably got a good case there. So go ahead and try it, type of thing. So, you know, there are definitely instances where, you know, we're kind of pushing the envelope for sure, but a lot of the big stuff, you know, when we do Halloween or Day of the Dead and that type of thing, that's all licensed properties, and we pay for that for sure.
And then I was looking at the special collector's edition box set. Are you a fan of the Ben Cooper costumes and everything?
Oh, I
love
them.
Because the Tar Man, that is a beautiful display box. And that's exactly, you know, what I pictured. Like, that looks just like a Ben Cooper type box.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in that era, all of us did, where, you know, to get a Halloween costume, my mom made me some costumes as a kid and everything. Not every year I had a Ben Cooper one, but certainly when I was younger, from when I can first remember to at least 6 or 7, I can remember going to, you know, my local Kitty City and walking in and seeing stacks upon stacks of these boxes, and you'd have to look either at the top or on the edge there where they would have the name stamped on it, which it was, and I'd look for the superhero I wanted to be. So I'm like, okay, where's the Spider-Man? Where's my size? And that type of thing. And it's just part of our childhood, you know, collective memory. And we just wanted to reference that somehow. And it was so great to be able to create something that I felt was like, you'd never see as a kid. We wouldn't have never seen the Tar Man Ben Cooper costume. It's just like those reaction figures that are coming out these days. You're going to get like Snake Plissken and all these other characters in these like cool 3¼-inch figures. And I'm like, oh my God, you'd never see that as a kid. So now we have the resources and the ability to create something like that. It was just a fun project. And we did have, you know, Monty Ward sculpt and produce all of them by himself. And that's one of the reasons why they cost so much, because they're all, you know, handmade. I mean, they're vacuum form, but they're hand painted and everything. I can say that we are planning another one this year of a much bigger property. I'm not going to say anything right now, but we have the rights. And these ones are actually getting done in China, only because of the manufacturing process and everything. It's just more efficient for us to do it there for this particular one. So we're going to, but they're going to be great, and they're going to be very similar, and it's going to come with a special shirt and all that. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm hoping we're going to announce it in the next couple months, and it'll probably be out, I don't know, August, September time. But I'll just say that it's for a very special anniversary of a film that came out 30 years ago this year. So it's going to be really, really cool.
Now that's a beautiful tease right there. That is that's the way you tease a product. Speaking of parents, like, once you started making money, how did you like tell them about it? Were you like, I'm the guy now who makes horror shirts. Like, I make cool shirts. Like, I'm the go-to guy now.
To my parents?
And were they like, were they behind you? Or were I don't get it. What do you mean?
Yeah, when I first, my first batch of shirts, it was three designs, and like I said, I was living in my apartment at the time, and I didn't trust UPS to just leave the boxes right in my foyer. So yeah. I had them shipped to my parents' house because I really just wanted to make sure, you know, I could get them with ease. And they were super proud. I mean, you know, when I first told them about it, it was like, wow, like, that's cool. And, you know, they were just, my parents have always been really supportive. So, you know, I told them I was doing this, and, you know, in fact, it was more of my, you know, fiance at the time that I had to convince, you know what I mean? Because she was like, hey, why did you spend all this money on your credit card? You know, it's like $600 I just blew, and we're getting ready for a wedding. And all this is just like, and I'm like, I don't even know how I'm going to pay this back. I just have to try this. I don't even know, you know, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to try something, you know? But no, my parents were always supportive. And then as it started, you know, they always interested in how it was going. They'd always ask me, even to this day, you know, we talk, you know, they only live not even 2 miles away from me, but, I see them every day practically because they watch my kids during the day usually. And they're like, hey, how are sales on that shirt? And my mom always gets the newsletter. So she'd be like, oh, I see you just launched that one. How's it going? And they wear my shirts too. Like they like the Clark's Revenge one, because they always come over to my house every year to watch Christmas Vacation. So they'll both be wearing a Clark's Revenge shirt. And I don't know, it's funny. My mom was just telling me how she gave someone my business card the other night. So they're totally cool with it.
That's awesome. That is very cool that they even wear the product themselves.
Yeah, I mean, and it's funny because they're totally not the, I mean, my parents are older. I'm the youngest of four. So they're, you know, my dad's in his early 70s. My mom's in her late 60s. And they're not, you know, I'm not saying they're not cool parents, because they're great. They're very cool parents. But at the same time, they're not. I mean, you see them in like a Fright Rag shirt, it looks very odd. It's just a weird juxtaposition, but in a good way, you know.
And speaking of a beautiful shirt that I think anybody could wear, the Christmas Story shirt.
Oh yeah.
How did that come about? Like a couple of the. The ones that come out are like, you really like just totally took it the totally different direction. Like, okay, here's this family movie. Now let's put a horror spin on it. And it out so great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Honestly, part of it is just taking movies that, again, you know, we grew up with as kids that are classics to us, and trying to find out some way to make a horror slant on it, because, you know, if we're selling horror-related T-shirts, we can't just go out and do a Christmas Story T-shirt unless, you know, we had another site or something. So trying to, like, wedge it in there, I mean, granted, not all of them fit, and we've come up with a bunch of ideas for, like, no, it doesn't work. So after the, you know, the Clark's Revenge was one of those things, because Christmas Vacation is, like, my favorite, probably my favorite comedy of all time, but definitely my favorite Christmas movie, I mean, next to Christmas Story, but Christmas Vacation I just love, and that's one scene I'm like, we have to do that. That would be awesome. And then I'm like, but A Christmas Story is great. What would we do with that? And I thought my original idea was having Ralphie with his eye totally like gouged out and him saying, you know, in the even in the pink costume, just for the hell of it, but having his eye completely gored out and having him being like, "I shot my eye out," that was the original idea. And then a friend of mine who works with us, he said, "Oh, wouldn't it be funny to have Ralphie like a killer?" And I'm like, "Oh, a Christmas gory," you know. And we just kind of riffed off of that idea, and that's and then I gave it to Justin Osborne to do the artwork, and that was his. Based on those things, he came up with that that design. So it was pretty organic the way that all kind of came together, and that's the way a lot of this stuff does.
Have you had any problems yet with like a bootlegging of the shirts? Because I like a lot of times you'll see like real popular shirts like back in the 90s, like Austin 316 or NWO shirts. They would get bootlegged like crazy.
Oh yeah.
And now, I see that there's other companies trying to pop up, but I, for the life of me, could not tell you what these other companies are called because I only know Fright Rags. Like that's what I associate when I see a horror t-shirt.
Yeah. I mean, we get, you know, it does happen from time to time, especially with sites like Redbubble and Etsy and Zazzle. We, you know, in fact, just the other day I saw somebody on Zazzle selling two of our designs. And it's like, I mean, exact ripoffs of ours. I mean, not anything that was even trying to be, like, not the same idea, the exact same design.
Yeah.
It's funny because in most cases, it does happen once in a while, and usually they're inferior products. But also, it usually happens to our sort of more simple designs that are like one or, you know, a couple colors. Stuff like the really kind of high end where we're doing like 10 plus colors, it's harder to rip off unless you're doing like a digital print because no one's going to take the time to separate all that out. They don't have a large enough image. It's going to come out like crap. But we've had that happen. I've had to send people letters or be like, "Hey, you can't do that." And people take it down. Some people get really nasty. And most of the time, it's not anybody that's making any real money off of it. You know,
yeah.
It's not like some huge competitor or something. It's usually like these guys that, you know, some people we've had are like, "Well, I found on Google Images, I can use whatever I want," and you kind of have to educate them like, "No, you can't." Like,
it was on the internet, it must be free.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much of that out there that it's unfortunate that that's the mindset. Some people even think that because they bought the shirt, they can somehow use the image however they want. And I'm like, no, like, I don't, how do you even come to that conclusion? But those people are out there. So
see that you're branching out into the screen printed posters.
Mm-hmm.
That Halloween one, that is a beautiful poster.
Oh,
is that something that you plan on doing more of? More like branching out into different products, you know, putting out high quality posters?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an area. I mean, we've kind of flirted with it in the past for a few things, and it's always been something I was interested in. Obviously, the top guys doing posters are Mondo, and they're great friends of mine. In fact, we collaborated a few years ago on a poster and T-shirt project, and we get along great, and I love the stuff that they do, and they like what we do, but they definitely – they kind of corner that market in a way that if we're going for a property, you know, if they've already kind of gotten in there, they will already have the screen printing, you know, the limited edition poster rights, if you will. So we can't get in there and do that. But for something like Halloween or you know, another property, I'll pitch it to the company or studio and I'll be like, "Hey, we'd like to do a poster with this shirt as a collector's unit." Because here's the thing, the stuff that we do, the collector's editions and all these things, a lot of it really comes down to what we're allowed to do with our licensing. Because what people don't realize is that if we want to get something like Evil Dead 2, which we did a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. there is already one or two companies, but usually just one company that's already got that license, that's got the license to sell wholesale these shirts all over the world. So you can go to, you know, Hot Topic or Walmart or, you know, some mom and pop shop online to buy an Evil Dead 2 shirt. That's why you see the same exact Evil Dead 2 shirt in like 20 different stores. Okay. So mm-hmm. it's this one company making all of those shirts for all those companies. Well, it's great because Hot Topic is going to order, you know, 7,000 shirts, and Walmart or whatever is going to order 10,000 shirts. So you're making this money back on sheer volume, okay? And so they're paying the license fee, but they're making their money back doing just volume work, okay? We are direct. We do not sell wholesale. It's not that we haven't. We've sold to Hot Topic before and all those things, but we have built our business as a direct business. And unfortunately, when you go to get these licenses, like, say, Evil Dead 2, the only way we can get it is to only sell it on our site. So we can't compete. We can't sell it in Hot Topic because someone's already done that. We have to sell it through FrightRags.com. So we now have to make the same amount of money as those guys do, but through our own website. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So we have to figure out a way to make it work for us. Otherwise, we can't put out cool stuff, you know? And that's not the only reason why we put out box sets. We did it before we were even doing mostly licensing. I came up with it as an idea to do something different because I wanted something unique, something for people to go, whoa, like, holy crap, I want that. But now with licensing, it kind of forces us to be like, okay, if we really want this property, what are we going to do to make this worth it, not only for us, but for our customers, because we don't want to put out something crappy, and we're not going to put out something junky just to make money. But at the same time, you have to come up with a really cool, unique product. So in some ways, it really forces us to be creative. I mean, that's how we came up with the Necronomicon box, the wooden box that we had hand sculpted and poured in latex and made it look like an actual book, you know, and that's one of my favorite products that we ever released. And in some ways, the way we got the license forced us into doing things like that, but it was cool that we were able to do that. So getting back to your point, the screen printed posters is a way for us to sort of branch out a little bit. I love posters. So it's not an unnatural thing for us to want to do. And it's also a fun way to kind of play around with. We also are looking into doing some hats because we had our printer do some hats for us, and they look great. So that could be an area to move into. And you know, we're always looking to expand into ways that make sense for us and our customers.
Now, did those licenses ever expire? Because I see there's the graveyard, and, you know, whatever gets the most popular votes comes back. Now,
right.
If something has sat there for 5-6 years and you bring it back, does that license still carry over? Does it have to be reinstated, renegotiated?
Yeah, in most cases, that is the case. So licenses always have an expiration date, and it's generally about 2 years. After we're done with a two-year license, we usually have a sell-off period where we can't make any new product, but we are allowed to sell off our remaining product. At that time, we can negotiate an extension. We can negotiate a renewal. We've done that in a couple of occasions where we've actually had some licenses where we've been able to just be like, hey, we want to keep selling these shirts. And like, you know what? Here, let's just do an addendum saying that you can do it until we say you can't do it anymore type of thing. So it really depends on the property and the studio. I mean, the larger studios obviously are a little bit more legal-minded because they have to be because they're big studios. So they're kind of like, okay, we have, you know, there's all new agreements or whatever the case may be. Whereas, you know, the smaller sort of more nimble companies can be like, oh, just send me a draft and we'll sign it type of thing, you know? It really depends on the property and the company. But in general, yeah, it's going to expire at some point. So if we're going to do it again, we're going to have to pay the license fee again and get the license again.
What does the future hold for Fright Rags? What else can you tease for us that will be coming up?
That's a really good question. This year we are trying to finalize a few deals that I think would be really great. I don't want to tease anything too much because I don't, A, want to jinx myself, and B, get anybody's hopes up for something that we might not put out. But I can tell you that we are looking at kind of, you know, like I mentioned, the one film that we're going to be doing at Vancouver Mass for, it's 30th anniversary of that. There's the 25th anniversary of something else that we're kind of looking into doing to sort of like highlight some properties that really should be highlighted that we haven't done before. We're also branching out not just into films, but, you know, there's a TV show that we're looking at, and it's not The Walking Dead, but a TV show that aired back in the late 80s, early 90s that we're looking at getting the rights to do something limited for, and even comic books, again, not The Walking Dead, but classic comics that we're looking at getting the rights for. In the future, beyond that, you know, my whole, you know, kind of time is spent trying to develop relationships with other companies to try to get, you know, access to titles that we just have never been able to access before. And that's what my goal is for this year and in the coming years. And what I'm hoping to do eventually is to actually branch out to do possibly even non-horror related stuff, and to bring what we do to other titles that would just make sense as a whole. Because, you know, I'm sure yourself included, for me as a kid, horror was a huge part of my life. I mean, I didn't go very many days without watching a movie or, you know, listening to music or, you know, something horror related. But yeah, at the same time, there's a lot of movies and shows and just things in general that inform my childhood that just were not horror related, that were, you know, I mean, E.T. is a wonderful film. You know, I saw it when I was 4. Die Hard, you know, stuff like, you know, action movies, you know, family movies, stuff like that, that just don't fit under our Fright Rags umbrella, but they could fit somewhere else. And if we bring the same artist, the same style, the same vision, and of course back it up with the same service and quality, I feel like, you know, that might be an avenue for us.
That would be so beautiful. There's so many great 80s action films that I would love to see, like, you know, Die Hard, Bloodsport.
Yeah.
Anything with Stallone, Van Damme, Bruce Willis, you know, just those classic action films with the great explosions. Anything like that would be great on a shirt.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that, there's definitely no shortage of ideas. It's just time and resources.
Ben, I want to thank you again for coming on the show. It was great to talk to you. I could talk about horror 24/7.
I hear you. Me too.
Before we go, one last thing about, this is about horror films. What do you think about this teased upcoming Friday the 13th sequel that's not really a sequel to the remake, and it may or may not have Jason?
I was reading a little bit about that. I haven't followed everything. I just heard bits and pieces about it being possibly a found footage film and maybe not even having Jason, like you said. I'm a huge Jason fan. I mean, I was always a big slasher fan, so Halloween being my favorite movie, I've always loved Michael Myers, but of course in the 80s, Jason kind of, and Freddy for that matter, ruled because they were just coming out with movies every year, whereas, you know, it was Halloween 1, 2, and then, of course, 3 without Michael, and then you had to wait, like, several years before 4 and 5 came out. But, so, I don't know. For me, Jason is, like, one of the top for me, and I don't necessarily like the idea, but at the same time, I'm not one of those guys that's just going to go crap on anything new. To me, it's like they've already remade it. They've already done something different with it. Okay, fine. You know, what's going to happen is if they do this, we're all going to go watch it anyway. You know, yeah. I'm going to go see it anyway, whether I end up liking it or not. I'm going to go watch it, and maybe it'll be interesting. Maybe it'll suck. I don't know. I saw the new Evil Dead. I didn't really love it. I didn't hate it. I was entertained for an hour and a half, but I'm not going to run out and buy the DVD because it didn't affect me like the original did. But I don't feel like anybody raped my childhood. You know, that's what I hate about what people talk about these days. It's like, you know what? They didn't ruin the first Evil Dead. They just did their own thing, you know? And
yeah, the original was still there.
Yeah, you can go home and watch it. It's there. It didn't disappear. And with this Friday 13th, you know, if I had to say what my opinion was, I'd be like, well, I think it's kind of a crappy idea, but I'm not going to just, you know, lambaste it all over the place until we actually see something. You know, I think people are too quick to just criticize and not give anything a chance, and that's what's going to kill these movies, you know. And at the same time, you could argue, oh, come up with something original. Well, they are, you know, they're trying something different. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I'll give it a shot.
Well said. I couldn't have put it any better. Once again, the site is FrightRags.com, and they carry the best shirts. Hands down, that should be the tagline. We carry the best shirts. Thank you, Ben, and we will be right back after this.
Hey guys, this is Rich here, and I wanted to say thank you for taking the time to listen to this show and the others on the site. The shows are free and always will be, but if you like what you hear each week, you can show your support by doing your shopping through Amazon.com. Now, I'm not telling you to run out and buy anything right now, but if you are going to buy something, why not click on the Amazon banner at the top right of thedevilseyes.com, and you can get sent to the same Amazon place. The only difference is Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the site and the shows. There are no extra charges to you, and it will help us keep the shows that you love running free forever. Our shows have always been free, and we aim to keep it that way. So one more time, thedevilseyes.com, and click on the Amazon banner when you do that shopping. And that's going to do it for this episode of Rabbit and Red. Nothing really to talk about. Not enough content to put out a whole show, especially with the Olympics going on. I covered RoboCop and everything, and a lot of the other releases in another show, so no reason for me to sit here and drown it out, you know, reiterating the same things. Had a really good interview there with Ben Scrivens from Fright Rags. Enjoyed it. I hope you all did too. Definitely go check out FrightRags.com and check out the newest shirt, which is a Misfits shirt in with a play on Friday the 13th, Jason's Mask. We will be back here next week, hopefully. And until then, take care, everybody.